Hello, fellow Redbirds. Welcome to Bird Fans Forever podcast number 58. Please follow us on our Bird Fans Forever Twitter account to be notified of our latest podcast videos. Also, go visit our website, www.birdfansforever.com, where you can find a list of our previous podcasts. Finally, go visit Bird Fans Forever on YouTube and slam dunk that subscribe button. Our YouTube site has our Redbird game archive, where you can go find a classic Redbird game to watch. We've been getting a lot of videotapes from friends of the podcast that John's been transcribing to our digital library. Our guest for this podcast played for the Illinois State Redbirds men's basketball team from 2009 to 2013. At the time he left ISU, he was ISU's all-time leading shot blocker with 200 blocks, our third leading rebounder with 942 boards, and eighth leading scorer with 1,580 points. In his senior year, he averaged 17.4 points and 9.3 rebounds per game, was named first-team All-MVC, was on the All-MVC defensive team, and was named to the Lou Henson Mid-Major All-American team. This Redbird always makes me think about the full-court pass versus Evansville, where Jordan Threelaw throws a full-court basketball throw to Jackie Carmichael with 2.8 seconds left and down one. Jackie launches a three-point shot to win the game at the buzzer. Such an exciting play that pumps me up when I watch it, even to this day. That's right, Redbirds. Our guest for today is Jackie Carmichael.
Hello and welcome to episode 58 of Bird Fans with Ever, Forever. We have Jackie Carmichael, number 32, with us. How are you doing, Jackie?
I am doing great. Thank you guys for having me. I am very, very honored. Seriously, I've heard so much about this podcast, so thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to be recruiting Jackie to help us because we have struggled to get into your generation of players, right? That 2010 through 2014, right?
Right.
So, yes.
Yeah.
So, Jackie, we ask the same question every time. How did you get to ISU?
Oh, man. How did I get to ISU? So, Tim started recruiting me when he was at Kansas when I was a sophomore in high school. And this was just, I think, by peer of him just knowing I went to Manhattan High.
Throw Tim's last name in and what exactly?
Tim Jankovich. Yeah, Tim Jankovich, former coach at Illinois State. And then he finished out at SMU. And so Tim knew of me. And I think Illinois State was always recruiting me. And like I would always see the letters. But by the time I started playing AAU at 16 and started getting actually some letters from other universities. And at that point I was kind of like, oh, I want to go to the Big 12. And I was like, it's either KU or I'm not going to play college basketball. Like that's how I was thinking. And then afterwards, I ended up actually choosing to go to prep school. I think a lot of people maybe saw me as like a project. And so those offers that probably would have like came in really didn't come in because either they got their guys or whatever the case may be. So I chose to go to prep school. Everybody thought I was crazy and really didn't understand like what I was doing, like what you're going to go to like a fifth year of high school. And I was like, no, like on the East Coast, like this is a thing that they do, instead of like starting, junior college. And so ended up going to South Kent. We had an amazing team, got to, play on the East Coast and just appreciate like that, the basketball from like that area of the world. I think it's just obviously like New York is the Mecca. I got to play in Queens and all these. So it was really a cool experience and actually added to like my love for basketball at the end of the day. And so I actually ended up coming back for spring break, had a couple offers, and ended up going to the Kansas State, Illinois State game. That was in the NIT and actually watched my then future teammates, Osiris, Lloyd Banks, and or Lloyd Phillips, sorry, Lloyd Banks, Lloyd Phillips, Lloyd Phillips, and Dima. So, I mean, it's like it was really crazy. But after the game, I ended up running into, if you remember, Kerry Darting, who was the Dobo. His dad, what's Coach Darting's first name? I think Terry. He coached against me in high school and he, wow, coached at Highland Park. So he actually coached Kyle Weems that played at Missouri State. And so he always knew about me. I was running, I had ran track in high school and Coach Darting had actually called, Tim and said, hey, do you want this 6'9" guy that runs the 400 in like a 47 sec? He's like, yeah. He's like, who is that? He's like, Jackie. He was like, we thought Jackie was going to St. John's. And he was like, no, like I just saw him at the Kansas State basketball game. He's not committed to anybody. And Tim literally picked up the phone, called me and said, hey, I want you to come on official visit. We'd love to have you. And to be honest with you, I only took two official visits out of all five. Yeah. So my first ever official visit was to Northern Arizona. And it was, what was the coach's name? It doesn't matter. He tried to pressure me to sign my letter of intent at the airport before I went back to fly back to Kansas. And I was like, no, I got to talk to my family. He was like, this is ridiculous. We brought you here. We spent all this money on you. And mind you, this was before NIL. So, it, you know, they got me a couple of pizzas and some cookies. And he's like, hey, we literally spent all this money on you and you're not going to. And I was like, no, I can't. So it scared me out of official visits. And so I was terrified to come to Illinois State. And Tim convinced me, convinced my mom. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. He said, you know, I'm going to give you opportunity as a freshman. And if you, you know, believe in me and trust in me, he goes, I really believe that you can, you know, be the face of this, but you can come here and like have an a real opportunity at really playing college basketball. And I mean, a guy from your hometown, that's the best player to come out of your hometown. And, you know, he has, is highly revered at one of the colleges that I wanted to attend. I was like, oh, this is like, I feel like this is a match made in heaven. So, you know, him, Rob Judson, Paris Parham, and Anthony Bean were my coaching staff when I arrived in 2009. But that's how I got to Illinois State. So it was a wild ride to get there.
Oh yeah. And that pressuring, I think everybody we've ever talked to that's gone through the recruiting had somebody pressure them.
Right.
And it's usually a smaller Division I school that knows they're trying to almost like steal somebody, right? And take advantage of a kid that doesn't know any better. So, yeah, that is awesome. All right, so let's start. We'll roll right into your freshman year. So you get on campus, you start playing. What's your freshman year like? How did the guys treat you? Right, because you come in and you start starting pretty, like almost out of the gate, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Man, so when I first got, everyone was great. Like there was no one. I think the reason why I wanted to attend Illinois State as well was because how well I was received by the, I mean, my, what would now be my teammates. And, yeah. And that was Champ. Well, Champ was on my visit, but he had already left. He had graduated. So I had met with Champ. I met with Osiris, you know, Dima, all these guys that I was kind of like, oh, okay. Like I see the atmosphere and I see what they're like trying to build. And so when I got there, they were really, you know, happy to have me. You know, some scrawny freshmen, you know, they hazed me a little bit, you know, they did haze me. It, you know, they make you earn it. But all in all, I think they, you know, I earned their respect just cause I was always just a hard worker. And I think that that's what they, you know, look for in freshmen. They really don't look for you to come in and really do anything other than like earn your keep pretty much. So, you know, I fought for everything in practices and, you know, cracked the starting lineup fairly quickly. You know, and coach, and I was happy to have that confidence from Coach Jankovic. But yeah, freshman year was awesome. I got to experience Bradley for the first time. And actually I think that was like the first time since Tim had been there that they had actually won at Bradley when they did the whole when they did the whole blackout and everything. So for that to be your freshman experience and actually to get a real taste of the rivalry that was, you know, the war on 74. I feel like it was just so authentic where I was like, it literally paved the way for the next 3 years after. But yeah, freshman year was awesome. We definitely underachieved. We underachieved my all 4 years at Illinois State, maybe except for one. But, you know, I wanted it more for our seniors because I knew what Osiris had waiting for him. I knew, you know, what these guys wanted to achieve and they had been so close the year prior. It's like, you obviously want to send those guys out, you know, with some hardware.
Yeah,
So that freshman year, okay, you talked about beating Bradley. That was special. You know, the year before, they start off, I think it was 14-0, and they went to Bradley. And Bradley's the one who broke that streak right after they had kicked the crap out of Crazy at home. So I'm sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So I'm sure You probably didn't realize how sweet a victory that was.
You know what? I didn't, because, you know, but prior to that, I didn't really have any knowledge of what it was until I got on campus. And I, you know, that would have been what, 3 years by the time I would have got there. So, yeah, I knew they did have some, Illinois State had some good teams, you know, leading up to when I got there.
So when you're a freshman and you're going up against Dima, how was that?
he beat me up every single day. honestly, I'll tell you this. Dima is the nicest person in the world, because there'd be days in practice he would 100% let me move him a little bit, or like he wouldn't like take super advantage of me, because if he really wanted to, I mean, the dude was unbelievable. I mean, it was like playing against the Incredible Hulk. I mean, it was just like, I had never seen anybody that big, that strong, could move that quick, jump that high. I was like, you know, this showing up every day and having to battle like I was. I mean, it'll make you a good player. It'll make you tough. It'll make you tough for sure. You know, because no one else was. You know, when you see Gregory Echenique, I think he came when I was a junior. You know, I'd already was familiar with guys like that. You know.
Yeah, but talk about a person that transformed. He was very skinny when he first came in too, right?
Yeah.
And then he built up. So it's, and John can talk about this, it's like with the bigs, it's like a rite of passage. You go in and take your lumps, right, under the boards.
Right.
It's different, right, than high school, where you're dominating the boards and people physically around you, and all of a sudden the tables are just completely turned.
Right. And I think that was one thing that I always was kind of in the way. Like, I would lift with the football team in the summer, so I'd always like try to have some sort of physique that would be able to hold up against, you know, some of these bigger guys. But you're right, when you get to college, it's a completely different type of strength. I mean, you can only be prepared for it once you're there and actually working with these guys and actually, you know, alongside of them. And yeah, you see the growth. I mean, Dima, I mean, he came in at, you know, I think maybe 200 pounds soaking wet, you know, and he left like 250, 260. So pure muscle.
Yeah. And you need the strength and conditioning. Also, I think it's the maturity of the body, right, that starts to happen between 18 and 22, your ability to put on a lot more muscle.
So, Jackie, let's talk about that junior season. That was a pretty special season. Especially the way it ended, you guys were playing really well. And there was one game at home. I don't know if it was a turning point of the season, but it's remembered by everybody that's a Redbird fan. And to this day, it was against Evansville, right? You guys are down by two.
Right.
And I want to talk about, first of all, how they drew up the play and how you got selected, because, like, I'm looking at all the three-point – oh, hold on a second. Let's talk about some of the three-point shooters on that team. I know that year you were 2 for 4, and that's 50%, but
– right, right.
You had a very small sample size.
You had Mr. Brown, who just shot tons of threes and shot about 45%.
Right.
Nate Moore, who shot 40%. Allen, 40%. And somehow the blog was used. Let's talk about the play. Why, and how is it even like drawn up? Because that's what I want to know.
Right. Okay. So, and this is the first time I'm really saying this publicly. So, you'll get the real deal. Because, you know, we've talked about it in passing, whatever the case may be. But this is the first time I'm actually going into real detail outside of like people in my family that know the story. And so initially what had happened was, leading up to that, like, we were a pretty good team my junior year. And like, we just slowly just kind of like built something. And like, so you could kind of feel it, like, leading up to the Evansville game, it was like guys were in the gym early. We were shooting threes. Like, we were just playing all these different types of like games with each other before practice. And we just all would just sit there and shoot threes. And I've always been able to shoot the ball. It's just, I grew up in the era, if you're the biggest guy, you get put underneath the basket. Yeah. And I had to develop my game literally from the rim out. And so I just would, you know, try to creep out there, whatever. And so we had already been working on this in practice probably for like 2 or 3 weeks. Like, we've been playing games, whatever. So I feel fairly comfortable at the 3-point line. Am I shooting them in practice? No. You know, so, and at that point, I had a shot one in a game? No. So, you know, the opportunity for me shooting a three in a game was probably not going to be very likely. And so Evansville game rolls around, end of the game comes, and, you know, obviously Tyler Brown is an elite shooter. I mean, I've never played with someone that can shoot the ball that well. And we had Nick Moore. We had, you know, we just had some real snipe. We had some real sharpshooters on the on our team. So Coach Jank is like, "Hey, I'm gonna drop this play, Jackie. You set a pick, and you're gonna send it like a it's like a back screen for Tyler Brown. TB is gonna go to the corner. TB is gonna catch it. TB is gonna shoot it. TB is Tyler Brown. I'm sorry. In my mind, I'm like, if this ball comes to me, I said, there's 3 seconds on the clock or 4 seconds on the clock. I said, I got to put it up in the air and I'm shooting the ball. I was like, it was already in my head. I was like, if I catch it, I'm shooting it. Cause something else was like saying, I don't really know. Like we've never been in these high pressure situations as a team. Like this is like one of the first ones where we're like, if we win this game, it's going to push us into the postseason. If we don't, it's going to be a, you know, we've come back. It's going to be a real bummer that, you know, we weren't able to do this, whatever. Right. So at that point, I'm like, I'm not too confident in some of these guys on the floor right now. Like, you know, we may either execute this or we may not. And then the first sign I see somebody's not doing something that they were supposed to do on the board, I'm getting to the open spot where the ball is supposed to be at and just try to shoot it. Cause I knew TB was behind me. So I knew at the worst case scenario, I could maybe tip it to him.
Right.
So get it. And I see Jordan throws the launches the ball. And when I see it coming, I see Colt Ryan here. I see another guy and I see the guy that was in front of me. I see him kind of flank back to Tyler. Cause I set a back screen. And so you can see, I think it maybe was Frenchie. And so, or sorry, Frenchie is John Wilkins.
Yeah.
So I apologize.
No.
We
love it. Keep the nicknames going.
Okay. So John Wilkins, Frenchie, somehow gets like almost like I raised up and he almost like slipped the screen. So it like wasn't a great screen. He slipped it and the guy went with him because he was more of the 3-point threat. And then Tyler was in the corner. So we're stacked at the corner.
Right.
And I'm like, I think I have to shoot this. And so I push it in the air once and I'm like, all right, second time it comes down and I just got to, and like literally I got it. I just aimed straight for the backboard to like at the angle and you know, it went in.
So I was trying to bank it.
Like I was honestly trying to bank it in because I couldn't see the way that it was and how I put it up. I was like the only angle. I was like, if I aim for the rim, I'm either going to get there or I'm going to kind of like it's going to push out and I might hit the front of the rim. I'm like, if I put it towards the back of it, I at least got a little bit more time or I can it's at least a better angle to what I thought.
Yeah.
To say that all that went through my brain, it was literally it felt like I've been able to dissect it now. Back then it was just like, hey, I'm just trying to put up a good half decent shot, but I was looking at the backboard.
No.
And so,
Purple Aces fans, you heard it. Call bank.
Yeah, silently, I called bank. I was looking at the backboard. I was not really staring at the rim. I was really trying to get it up onto like the backboard rim. Because even if there was a time for a tip out, I was just like, you know, I was trying to give it a chance at least.
You know, did you guys have set, like when I played, we had set plays for this situation. So you were used to throwing that long pass. You'd already done that in practice a couple of times. Because I've talked to a couple of players. They're like, we never practice anything like that. So I'm just curious if you guys practice something like that in practice.
Right. We honestly, up until that point, we would practice like some late game situation stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was typically like, you know, back screen, very basic back screen for the guard. Guard kind of like, you know, takes a little, I don't know, like, kind of gets on the sideline, kind of, you know, bends that and then, you know, we try to get it to him and, you know, get a shot. Other than that, or throw it to the big and then the big do a handoff with the guard and let the guard try to go full speed.
Yeah. We had one of those too.
Yeah, like one of those. But it wasn't never anything crazy. Like, hey, let's. Coach Jenk was really good at X's and O's, and he could really draw up a play on the spot. So I mean, it really kudos to him because I think he just kind of pulled it out of the bag, honestly.
Very cool.
Yeah. So you make the shot.
Yeah.
And then, man, I'm telling you, this is like one of the greatest celebrations I've ever seen. Now, were you running in fear that your teammates were going to tackle you and you're running for safety or what?
It wasn't because of that. My legs just went. Like, I don't know what, my legs had a mind of its own and went one way, and I was just like, did that really just happen? Like, did we win the game? Like, I had never experienced anything like that before, to be completely honest. Like, it was really just more like a spasm where I think we just won the game. And Coach Jenk thought the game was tied. If you look back at the film, Coach Jenk is telling everyone to calm down. He's like, calm down, everyone settle down. And I had just trampled Reggie to Redbird. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, I'm like, Coach, it was a three. He was like, oh, okay. He was like, oh. He's like,
I think we have the footage. So
yeah, yeah. You can see. Seconds. He goes, oh. He's like, okay.
So it was a flight or fight situation. You just ran and yeah.
I just took off and ran and said, I ran the opposite direction of what was going on. I was just like, I'm just gonna, I was like, try to run the locker room. I don't know.
And we have it on Bird Fans Forever, right? So we have all these games out there. We have a ton of your games out there. So the game is out there. So I will be dissecting the footage. So. Just so you know, Jackie, we're not going to see your face when you're talking about this. It's just going to be playing that play over and over again. So, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that is awesome. All right, Steve, next question.
So I actually do. I think that game kind of like gave you guys that kind of catalyst. You guys really finished well.
Yeah.
And then you had this momentum. You go into the NBC tournament. And I don't think, like, fans now, they don't appreciate how good the Missouri Valley was back then. Okay.
Man.
So you end up getting to play two top 25 teams, okay? And let's talk about that semifinal game. You get to beat the beloved team from your home state.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the game, because you had a great game in it.
Yeah. So I was actually supposed to be on that Wichita State team, believe it or not.
No, you weren't ready for that.
Yeah, so. they recruit... What's funny about it is, I say meant to be there, meaning they tried to get me there. Let's say that they tried to get me on that team. I was meant to be on that team. But I say that to say they came up to school, tried to recruit me. And at the time, Wichita State really wasn't, it wasn't Wichita State. Like, it wasn't really moving in the way of, like, you thought of them as being, in a big conference, playing, big time games. Like, you just didn't equate that. Like, when I was in school, you're like Wichita State, like, what, whatever. Like, same with Illinois State. Like, you're like, you're thinking of these big schools. So going back and now playing them at that point in time when they're ranked was, in building up, even that rivalry had been building up since my freshman year. Like, I don't think that we viewed them as really a threat. It was always back and forth. But then by my freshman year, I feel like we were always somewhat, like, they were a little bit better than us, but I was like, I think we're getting as good as them. We're just moving at a little slower pace. So by the time we met them in the Missouri Valley tournament, all bets were off at that point. And we were really able to take care of business. And it was a tough game. It was a really tough game. We started off really well. They obviously, they had Joe Raglin. They had, they had some guys that, have had great careers as professionals. Greg Marshall could always knew how to recruit and always knew how to get his type of players there. And, we're super successful, but yeah, that night we got the best of them. And it was, how it all played out is so crazy. I remember jumping at Garrett Stutz and putting my arm up and being like, oh my God. I'm like, I hope he does not make this shot. But we prevailed, and then ended up playing Creighton in the final. And Doug is slowly becoming Doug McDermott, and they got Grant Gibbs, they got Gregory Echenique, a great team, and honest and truly, we were better than them that day. You know, I think what had plagued us at the beginning of the season, I think you kind of always see that play out in certain bits and pieces at the end of the season, where you're like, okay, we're a newer team. We don't have any like real leadership as seniors are concerned. You know, so we were vulnerable to make certain mistakes, and that's what happened that pushed us into overtime. You know, because at that point we really, like, as a 40 minute team, I don't think there was anyone in the Missouri Valley that year that was better than us. I think playing a full straight up 40 minute game, I really think we were the better team. When we get into overtime, you know, we just lost our focus. You know, they had guys that could control the tempo, and like, you look at a guy like Grant Gibbs, very slow, very methodical, and then you put a guy like Doug McDermott in a corner or as a shooter, and you got to guard Grant. You know, he's a good enough passer, you know, that he can get that to him, and then you got a big guy down low carving up space to get the offensive rebound. You know, they had all the right weapons that year to push them to that. So yeah, how it played out was crazy. And then then we end up going to NIT and doing the NIT, and you know, and really, I think showing the national stage how good of a team we were, because I think those two wins were NCAA tournament wins that push us into a Sweet 16. That's what I think.
Yeah, look, that Creighton team was number 25 in the nation. Obviously, right. They were super efficient, and McDermott was breaking out. You know, he was becoming something special.
Right, and I mean, don't forget, and they had Ethan Rogge, who was a 6'6 Clay Thompson for them. I mean, literally pull up from almost half court, it felt like. And that's, you know, you see the trajectory that Creighton's on now and what Coach McDermott's been able to do with them. It's just so crazy that Wichita State and Creighton, those two teams, have gone on to be such great teams in other conferences now. And you've just seen kind of that, you know, that growth, which is really crazy. And that's people forget how tough the Missouri Valley really was.
All right, Jackie, you just got done. We just talked about the Missouri Valley Conference playing the 15th ranked and the 25th ranked Creighton Blue Jays and the 15th ranked Wichita State. They both suck. So let's talk about your NIT run that year, your junior year.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing was, even when we were getting ready and preparing for the NIT, it was like we were so – I feel like at the time we were so let down by the NCAA tournament, where I was like, you know, I think we really can do something special in the NIT, and I think that's where everyone's brains kind of like clicked for a second, like, oh no, we're actually like, this is a massive opportunity for us.
Massive.
You know, and so I think that really started to like click. And when we started to you know, prepare for Ole Miss, like, I think we really were feeling like in the locker room we can win this. Like, we don't think that they're better than us. We see what we're going to do. We zoned them for a good portion of the game. Coach Jankovic and the coaching staff drew up an amazing defensive game plan that put us in a 3-2 zone, that we put Nick Moore at the head of it. And, I mean, we were really, really good. And then they went to zone on us. And then we had some great shooters that year.
Yeah.
And as soon as they dropped, we were able to really take advantage. So, you know, they really won that game for us. And, you know, to be in Ole Miss and to feel like we were already the underdog. And I think actually before the game, I mean, I forgot about this. Coach Jankovic brought in a paper clipping that was one of the Ole Miss players talking about, yeah, you know, we got Illinois State first round and, you know, we're really focused on, you know, trying to get far, and you know it's going to be a tough task to play Stanford once you play Stanford. said something crazy. Said something crazy.
You. Yes.
Yeah. And we were like, what? And Coach James was like, yeah, here it is. This is, you know, and they, you know what they tell you? They said, never give another team bulletin board material.
Never.
Don't. And yes. Coach Jank was a true believer in that. He was like, I always tell y'all, don't say things to the media that's going to provoke the other team. Like, we want to sneak up on them and essentially just be assassins. And I'm like, I completely agree with you. Like, don't let people know that we're coming. So he put it up, let everyone see it. He actually printed it off and put it in everyone's seat. in the locker room, so we could all read it. Yeah, so we could all read it. And so game came around, guys are ready. Obviously, we go in there, take care of business, and you know it was just like, wow, we really did that. Like we really just beat an SEC team on the road, and
in their gym,
and you know. I don't even really think that we really fully processed it until we got back to Bloomington. And then two or three days later, they're like, okay, cool. Like we got the plans. We're going to fly to Stanford, but they're going to, the Miami Heat had a jet. I don't know if it's from United, but they had been traveling on one. I don't know if it was the Bulls, but it had went there and came back and it landed in Bloomington. Like that's the plane. Because it had enough fuel to take us from Bloomington all the way to the West Coast, and they had to find something that was big enough for everyone. So we remember them talking about that. We're like, "Oh, this is actually like a big deal. Like we're going out to play Stanford. This is the NIT." And I think at that moment we start to realize is that the more you start winning, the more money starts coming in. The more, you know, the luxury start coming in. Because I'm like, we've never been on a plane this big, this size. It just changed my whole perspective on things. And so end up flying there. We actually landed in Nevada. I think landed in Las Vegas and then went the rest of the way because they did have to fuel up the plane. And it was one of the massive Boeing 757s. I mean, the private jet liners that people like customized. That's what it was. It was an NBA jet. And so we get out there, start preparing for Stanford. And I think Coach Jankovic's preparation for that game was, yeah, you guys are here to play Stanford, but let's actually enjoy being in California in the sunshine. We just came from the Midwest where it was freezing cold. Like, let's go. He took us by Google. He took us by Facebook. He took us to Alcatraz. Like, it was a real family experience. So we were doing things as a family, and it felt so like we've been together for 3 years now. This is our family, and we're gonna fight for each other. We're gonna die for each other come Friday night. So, you know, he really did a great job of just building it and just having us so ready to play that game. And you know, the game in itself, how it even started to how it finished, was nothing short of like, you know, one of the best games I've ever been a part of. You know, it ranks really, really high up there. We talked about that off air. And, you know, that night I personally felt, I was like, I'm not about to have a bad game. I literally was like, there's no way. We're on ESPN primetime. There's no way that I'm having a bad game tonight. Like there, I've worked too hard to be in this position. Amen. Amen. And it was like really the time where, if I can just go back in the past really quick, when I was starting my junior season, Coach Jankovic, and nobody actually knows this, I've never said this, Coach Jankovic and Paris Parham were responsible for literally saying, Jackie, we think you should go to Chicago for the summer. Like, you're doing great in school, but we have these trainers up there that can work with you, like, after hours and essentially, like, can help you, like, give you a peek into, because they had always said to me, Jackie, we feel like you can play in the NBA. And I always thought that they were crazy. I literally was like, it doesn't make any sense to me what you're saying, because I was like, I couldn't see it for myself. Like Coach Jankovic was really trying to pull it out of me. And he did my sophomore season with, you know, I was just very inconsistent minutes off the bench, didn't have a great season. You know, he really pushed me. And so by the time my junior year came, he sent me to Chicago. I come back. And I was like, okay, this is how I get to the next level. Like, I was like, this is how I do it. Like, being around guys is just something to be said for when you're around guys that are playing at that level, you have no choice but to try and acclimate yourself so that you can survive, and essentially it just makes you a better player. And so I feel like I could feel that happening. And one of my teammates said to me, like the second or third game of the season, I had like 30 on Austin Peay or something. And he was like, man, I've seen a lot of people play. And he's like, you could really do it. And so that was like a teammate said it to me. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I think maybe if I really want to try and do this, like I really can buy in. And what Coach Jank is saying, like, I truly feel like I can move that direction. And so just slowly but surely, just in the gym, shooting, all the things led to that Stanford game. So at that point, I didn't even realize how many eyes were on me or like in that game. Like I did not realize that there was NBA people and agents and all these people just watching these games. And mind you, we're playing on ESPN, so they are watching it. And the game happens. Their point guard averaged 3 points, ends up having the game of his life, and you know, and ends up going for 30. They end up going and winning the entire tournament. But I think I finished with 25, 12, and you know, and maybe like 5 or 6 blocks or something like that. And so for me, it was like the defining point of, I always tell people, of my career, because at that point, I was put in a position by that coaching staff that then would leave. But that coaching staff, prior to when they left, put me in a position to go to Amari Stoudemire camp, LeBron James Academy. And that game was the catalyst into all of that, to where then, you know, essentially from that point, it really changed my life. But that Stanford game, I always tell people, I'm like, that is one of those like games where you're like, you know, when I feel like when people go and play at Duke, or when people get an upset at Duke, or you go and like you have feel that like environment, even like there at Stanford, that historical college, I mean, it was unbelievable, you know. And they had, and they actually had two guys that would go on to play in the NBA. They had Chason Randall from Rock Island, and or where's Chason Randall from? I can't remember. He played for the Knicks, and then they had Dwight Powell that plays for the Mavericks. Mm-hmm. That were freshman, senior, and a freshman.
Yep, they had talent.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk rebounding. You're number 3 all time. Man of brown heart. Yeah. Talk about what motivates you to rebound, right? Because that's just getting in and being a dog and working.
Yeah, and I would say that that's something that Coach Jankovic and I really say Coach Judson would be like, Jackie, the thing that is going to... I mean, Coach Jankovic would say, Jackie, if you want to get paid to play a sport, you have to rebound. Like, that's just simple and plain. Behind closed doors, he would tell me, and I don't know if he'd ever admit this, but he would say, Jackie, if you want to get paid to play a sport, you need to rebound. And he's like, I'm not talking about 10 rebounds a game. He goes, the people that get noticed and then the people that get to do this for a living, and I respect and why I love Coach Jankovic so much is because in my junior year, he saw it and he pushed me in a way mentally that I needed to be pushed. And he saw it, he knew it, and I always thank him for that, because I'm like, you pushed me to be the person that I am, because you had been around it but prior to with all these other great players. And, you know, you obviously coached under Bill Self. So he understood what it was going to take in order, and he understood what he was looking at. So I just always appreciated that from his point of view. And so when it came to rebounding, I was like, oh no, he's being very serious. And like, he's not just saying this to like, just say, hey Jack, like you need to go and get, right. He's like, no, Jackie, if you don't have 20 rebounds a game, he's like, you might as well, like you want to be the face of this team. You want to be the leader of this team. What sets you apart from the next guy? What sets you apart from the guy that's at Creighton or the guy that's at Duke or the guy that's here? He's like, because I think you're better than those guys or the guy at Stanford. But he's like, if you're not going to go out and do and get 20 rebounds, then, you know, what are we really talking about? Right. And I was like, oh wow. And I always like, I grew up watching Kevin Durant. I grew up watching Dennis Rodman. I grew up watching Patrick Ewing, Charles Barkley. I mean, all of the best rebounders, you know, of, you know, essentially of the history of the NBA. I'm like, that's who I have to be. And it, like you said, to your point, by the time I became a professional, I always tell people I learned basketball 8 years into my professional career of when it actually really clicked and made sense and was like, you can really, you know, this is how the game of basketball is meant to be played. Like you just get, you know, very, polished. But at that point, it was like, I just got to be the meanest, nastiest, toughest dude on the court, and everyone else will essentially back off, and I can get every single rebound. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, Carmelo when he yells at people, like, yeah, that he's got the rebound where he's yelling and screaming at people. That's what I essentially was doing. and just telling people like, hey, I got the rebound. Get out of the way. Like, get the rebound. I'm going to find the point guard and let's go. So this is something just built over time and just really like coach.
People get a double-double, right?
And yeah.
We celebrate it. So here's your stats junior, 13.9 points, 9.7 rebounds. So you average essentially a double-double.
Right.
17.4 points senior year, 9.3, almost the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's not only like it's the consistency too, right?
You know? Yeah.
It's also not getting foul trouble. Like you said, can't get any rebounds on the bench. So it's being mean and nasty. They're not following out of the game, getting
in trouble. Right. And you said it. It's really, you have to, I don't know if you've ever seen the hilarious meme of Dennis Rodman where he's like, when he talks about how the basketball comes off the rim and he's like, oh, if it goes this way, I go, oh, or it's like this way, I go this way. Yeah. Like it's hilarious. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go on YouTube and type in Dennis Rodman and talk about rebounding. But when he says that, it's like at that time, I was really starting to see, okay, like you said, like our team, we shoot a lot of threes. We got a lot of three-point shooters. Some nights, those three-point shooters are missing. And so it was on me to really be prepared to say, okay, if they're not going in, now I got to catch it. And I got to assume that, you know, with Nick and Tyler, it was always like, and we were telling them this, just pull the trigger. Like, go shoot the ball.
Yeah.
Shoot the ball. We'll score, 120 points, but just shoot the ball. You can shoot it 30 times if you want to. We used to tell Tyler, like, just shoot it. We don't care. And so you, in knowing that, you're like, okay,
it's going to. You guys too.
And yeah, I mean, listen. You know what? You can never say that Tyler Brown did not listen because he did listen when we told him to shoot the ball. He did not have a problem doing that. And so that was really the thing. That was really my thing where I said, I have to lock in on that thing. And people, I mean, like I said, coach and all of them, they were pushing me to do that. They're like, if someone else gets a rebound, take it from them. They're like, just don't let a rebound bounce, go and let someone else get it. It stuck.
So Jack, let's talk about your senior season. And you probably got a story that I don't think there's a player that could tell. and I wasn't sure about this. I had heard this, but you verified it.
Yeah.
You had a hand in designing the uniforms your senior year. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So prior to Coach Mueller getting there, it was already in the works. Like, we had already talked to Coach Jenk and said, hey, you know, we're going to get silver uniforms. They're like, because we're technically the tricolor at Illinois State is not black. It's actually silver, which a lot of people don't know that. But if you like look back at the history of it, it is technically silver. Anyway, so I was always like, oh, it'd be really cool. Like, I'd always seen Oklahoma State do like the smoke gray. I'd seen Kansas State do like smoke gray. I was like, all right, it'd be really cool if we did have some like silver jerseys. And then once Coach left, I was kind of like, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. But I said, I feel like I at least have a little bit of leverage. And so another story I've never told anybody. Coach Mueller flew to Manhattan while I was home for the summer and kind of like reassured me and said, hey, you know, everything's going to be okay. You know, we're going to move in a direction, just making this a really well-rounded team, so on and so forth. And it all sounded great. But, you know, before he left, I told him, like, coach, you know, if you want me to come back and not transfer and leave, I said, then you got to let me design the uniforms for the team. Like, messing with him, obviously. But I was like, kind of like, he's like, you can do the jerseys whatever you want. I was like, they said I could design them. I said, so, you know, like, can I? He's like, yeah. So I ended up, came back from the summer and worked with Julie, who was our equipment manager at the time, who handled all of our jerseys, everything. And so she showed me, like, essentially at that point, Nike used to have a platform that you could design basketball jerseys on. So this was Nike ID, but they actually had a real thing where you could go in and it would give you like a 3D of like a player, and you could do every single color combination. You could do all of like the letters of, you know, they had all of like the collegiate lettering, everything, patterns, everything. So, you know, I was like, you know, let me get in there and actually, so I got the login and would go home and really mess with it. And I was like, okay, we want the base cover to be silver, done. And then really just built out the rest of the uniform, really in kind of what would now be considered like a very normal process. Back then was, you know, it was still like a little bit, I felt like it was pretty futuristic, but you know, it was something kind of still fairly new. And and there was no college basketball players messing around with it in the back office, you know, building out, you know, uniforms. So I thought, I was like, this is really, really cool. You know, but Coach Mueller had to sign off on it. That's the only thing. So Coach was like, you can do it. I'll let you build it all out, print it all out, present it. And what you kind of see, if you've ever seen the article that was in, it was Illinois State, the university magazine, but for the fashion. What am I trying to say here? The apparel merchandising division. So like, I think it was the home ec. They pretty much built out and did like a whole article. And so when I started first, before I even started building out the uniforms, I had started classes in apparel merchandising. And so it was me and 100 sorority girls. I was the only guy in the building. I'm not joking. I was the only guy in the building. And, you know, I'm walking out of, I'll tell a side story real quick. I'm walking actually out of that building right next to the Redbird football field. My teammates saw me coming out, and obviously it's me, and I'm just surrounded by a bunch of sorority girls. And they're like, bro, where are you coming from? Where were you at? I'm like, I was at class. What are you talking about? They're like, where? I was like, over here. I'm like, what classes are you taking? And I had changed my major 2 times before, so they didn't really know or weren't really keeping up with what major I was doing. And so by the time I was a junior, I got into apparel merchandising. That's how I fell even into the fashion. I didn't even know Illinois State offered it. But yeah. I was talking about, well, you know, what your counselor is supposed to do. Like, what are you passionate about? What do you want to do? And I was always in business marketing, didn't want to do that, and then moved into physical education. Then I was like, okay. And then I found apparel merchandising. I was like, it really did match what my interests were. And I'd always been like a very creative, you know, person. So I was like, I always felt like clothing was the best way to express yourself, and I always enjoyed it. So I actually had 2 of my teammates actually drop their majors and actually transferred into the apparel merchandise. Wow. So Johnny Hill and Zeke Upshaw both transferred into, and I had a hand in that. The reason why they joined, I'll keep that, you know, the listeners can speculate on why both of them decided to come over to apparel merchandising, but we'll leave that for that story for another time. So they all joined, that all happens. I have a little bit of credibility because that is my major, so it's kind of like, you know college basketball loves a storyline, right. so it all worked. And the jerseys end up getting signed off by Coach Mueller. And they showed up, and believe it or not, some guys actually didn't want silver. A lot of people were on board, and then some people wanted black. And then he did make us actually vote. Coach Mueller did make us vote to kind of make it like a team thing where it wasn't like, okay, you know, we just are going to have silver jerseys. I think because some people did want black, but enough people wanted silver to where, you know, everyone was agreeable. So the order of operations.
Here's how that vote went. Jackie's like,
that's exactly
there's no hands went up.
I wasn't that teammate. I wasn't that guy. No, maybe some days, but not.
Jack Mueller said, "Whoever votes for black gets to do rebounding drills with Carmichael."
Yeah.
Or charge drills. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Charge drills. Or who'd you vote for?
Oh. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 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 Literally. Yeah. Literally. Literally.
That exactly. is so awesome that you got to design those. That is awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a really fun. It was a really fun experience. And like I said, I would have never ever thought that I would have got to design, you know, college basketball uniforms that I'd actually get to play in. You know.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you saw this, but 2-3 years ago, either players from Nebraska or Louisville, the red team, actually let 2 players design the jerseys. Like a couple years ago, and somebody put underneath, it was on Twitter, and somebody put underneath it, but Jackie Carmichael did it
10
first.
Years
and
ago.
I just thought that was hilarious.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So that senior year, you come in, new coaching staff, right? I think Justin was still there.
Yeah, yep.
How was that? And then, like, you guys got off to a pretty good start. I think you went, like, 9-3 in non-conference. Obviously, Louisville, that was a foul. You guys were 10-2.
Man.
That's another story. And then you transitioned into the conference play, and you started the first six games. You lost, but then you flipped the script again, and you went 7 on the next 8 games. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was it was interesting because, you know, you lose your point guard, a guy that goes on to be the player of the year in the school that he goes to. So you see what talent you obviously lost. And so, you know, moving into, you know, the season, I think we felt good, but we didn't feel like as strong as, like, to be the number one team in the conference preseason. Like, that's, you know, that's really big, you know, that's a really big standing. So I think we felt good, but then by the time we played, I think Montana, I think we're like, okay, maybe we're gonna really, you know, they had Larry Nance, they had a couple guys, and up by 30, relaxed, and then kind of what the theme of the season was is that we'd be up big, relax, they'd come back, and then we'd be in Dortmund. You know, it's how we lost some really critical games down the stretch. So it was the growing pains of having a new coach, you know, and what that really, you know, takes in order to really fight the ups and the downs of, you know, the coach is trying to find his footing with certain players. He's, you know, he's trying to find, you know, his footing as a coach and how he wants to, you know, we had some really unfortunate things happen my senior year as well. I won't get into them, but just that were distractions. And so, like any team, you know, no one's perfect, but at the same time, you do have those things, like you hear with all teams, that are distractions. I mean, look at Illinois last year, you know, in that whole situation, it's like those things distract from the team goal. And some teams are really good about blocking it out and it not being a thing. Other teams are like, whoa, you know, and let it catch them up and then get them off track of what our true goal was when we wrote up on the board at the start of the season, was to win a championship, win the Missouri Valley, and really finish what we started, no matter who was leading us. We knew that we only lost one player, you know. So I think, all of those things contributed to what you saw of us first going 0-6. And, you know, I think there was just some, like after that Montana game, I think that really rocked the boat for us to say, oh, you know, maybe we're not as good as we think we are. Like, maybe we do have some things that we probably need to work on before we, you know, think that we're better than everyone else in the Missouri Valley. And, you know, that year is the year Doug really took college basketball by storm onto, you know, to what he was about to do. And then you had Wichita State and had Clay Anthony early and, you know, some other really good players. So, you know, for us to, you know, for us to do what we did and to finish it out at least strong playing, you know, Wichita State in the semifinal, still, I think was, you know, we definitely underachieved, but I felt like for what it was, I felt like we all could hold our head high and at least say, hey, you know, we put our best foot forward until the end, and the ball didn't bounce in our favor. So,
yeah, I mean, I think you take those six games out, right?
Right.
Right. Well, no, I mean, there was a stretch that was not good, but
yeah.
But you take that 9-3 start, you take the 7-8, and it's like it's a different season.
Right. You know? Right. I mean, at that point, top 25 team, you know. Definitely, I think, make the NCAA tournament and, and finish it out. It's always, I told the current Redbird team this. I said, I love that 1998 banner and the fact that they got to the NCAA tournament, I said, is awesome. But I said, it should be 2012 up there. And I said, it kills me. It kills me. But I said, you know what? I said, you guys have an opportunity, you know, to do that and to try and, you know, write history and do it. Because I said, no one will ever be able to take that away from me. You know, I said, you know, you don't, it doesn't have to end the way that my story ended or any of these other guys. And I think, forget who said it on the Zoom that me and Jonathan were on, but it was really profound where he said, hey, I'm so sick and tired of it being March and me not be able to be happy because the Redbirds aren't in the NCAA tournament. You know, Jamar Smiley had an epic speech. And what really fired me up, and I was like, man, that's such a great way to put it, because typically guys will say, oh, hey, this is what happened during me, and you guys sure have a good team, and, you know, wish you guys the best. And he just came in and was like, well, no, you know, prove to me, you know, that you guys can actually, do what you guys are saying you're going to do. It all sounds great, but I'm, you know, honestly, truly sick and tired of not being seeing Illinois State in the tournament. So I think you guys need to change that. And I was like, wow, that was really real. That was
Jamar. Really, he is real. Yes.
It was
and
so
he was
good.
Also on episode 33, so our yes. boy Jamar Smiley.
Yes. I'm sure there were some gems in there. He literally was so much fun to listen to.
Yeah. All right, Jackie. This has been Bird Fans Forever. This is episode 58. With Jackie Carmichael. This is closing, big man. Here you go.
First of all, I want to thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it so much. It's been so much fun when I get to sit down with people who understand the history of Redbird Nation and what it means to be a Redbird, because I feel like sometimes you can only grasp that if you went to school at Illinois State, you know, and you were able to experience, you know, certain moments in history that, you know, like we said some great moments that happened and some not great moments. But the thing is that it's that camaraderie that comes kind of with that. And, you know, just being an alum of a university. So I'm so happy I got to do that. And, you know, I love speaking about my time there because my time was so great. And so in closing, I would love to say thank you to the Redbird community. I would say that to me was the reason why I felt so comfortable at Illinois State, and it just felt like so much like home. It felt so much like Manhattan, where I grew up. Everyone was so kind, and you just have that, you know, that real just hometown feel. So, you know, I just appreciate that so much, and all the just the kind people that were here during my time here, and you know, just the time that I've been back or been to games and stuff, how much that people even cared. So I think that's the biggest thing. I was able to do the things that I was able to do because of them. You know, they were the reason why I wanted to fight, and the reason why, you know, cared so much when people would show and pay their hard-earned money to watch us play games. You know, like those things mean so much, and I feel like I don't hear enough people say that. So, you know, that's definitely, you know, something I'd like to, you know, tip my hat to, or, you know, to bring attention to. Other than that, I'm so just thankful in general for people like yourselves that are carrying the torch for Redbird Nation and doing, you guys are literally doing your part. And that is so cool to see. And so I'm so just excited that I've got a chance to be a part of it, enjoy so many other, like you said, Redbird, players and just people that have been on here that support Illinois State the way that you, me, we all do. So, want to just say thank you to those people. And, you know, other than that, I look forward to sharing many more stories. I'm sure there are things after I get the podcast that I will think about or that I'll write down. But, you know, the 4 years I played there was absolutely unbelievable. And I'm so thankful that I was able to experience it the way that I did, because those are the things that carried me into my professional career as well. So I'm just super, super thankful. And yeah, I think that'll do it for me. So thank you guys.
Jackie, thank you for being on. We love watching you play. You were awesome. I love having a rebounder on.
Thank you.
I know we called out Jamar, but he's a point guard. We don't.
Jamar's my point. Big's got to stick together, man.
Yeah, Big's got to stick together. So, all right, everybody. This is episode 58 with Jackie Carmichael. John. Yes.
We try to find somebody up the floor. Brown, Moore, Wilkins, and Carmichael. The others out there for the Redbirds. Treloff looks, as he is handed the ball and throws it way down the floor, and it's caught by Carmichael. He fires. It's good! It's good! And the Redbirds win the game! Carmichael hits a three, and the Redbirds win the game! Can you believe it?